As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, a massive week for Newcastle United. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Mr. Chris Woff and also Mr. George Corgan. How are we doing, George? How's your legs?
Sore knee, tender soul, washed out. however, I'm doing significantly better than one of our colleagues, Jacob Whitehead. I'd just like to point out that the tortoise did beat the hare on this occasion. Just to remind a few people, there was a few of us running for the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation football writers, including a handful from the Athletic, doing the Great North Run at the weekend as Sir Bobby's team. Really good. We've raised $6,000 or so for the foundation, which is marvellous. Very proud of all my colleagues. We were given a scare by our colleague and friend, Jacob Whitehead, who disappeared off all metrics on the Great North Run app after 8 or 9 miles. And, of course, there's no reception at the end and very hot day. Couldn't find him. Went to the medical tent. No sign of him. Went to the lost person's tent. No sign of him. Nobody'd heard what happened. Anyway, finally got a text message through from him a couple of hours later just saying, oops. And I managed to get a phone call out and he was in hospital in South Tyneside. And I think he'd probably gone off a bit too quickly in dreadful heat. Anyway, he's totally fine. He's recovering. He got picked up. It was a very, very, very strange day, all things considered. And he's doing well. I've had a cup of tea with him today. I'm proudly wearing my Great North Run medal for this recording, something that Jacob will never be doing because he hasn't got one.
Oh, it's no need to rub it in, though, George. Come on.
No, it's a bit cruel. It's a bit harsh, that. But you know, experience counts for something in this world. That's all I'd say. He said, I thought I was doing okay. I thought I hydrated. I just went out at my training pace. It was so bloody hot, though.
Yeah,
it was. However, just whilst I've mentioned that, Jacob wasn't the hottest person at the Great North Run. I'd just like to pay special tribute to Eddie Howe, who started the Great North Run, of course, and seems to have been under the mistaken impression that he was attending a Johnny Cash convention, because he come dressed all in black, a black suit, black shirt. I mean, looked sartorially, looked really good. But you don't often talk about Eddie Howe and tactical errors, but what a tactical error that was.
Yeah.
Hottest day of the year, in black, full in black. And if you're a gentleman of a certain age, I'm sure you've all experienced this. I know I have. When you're so hot and you're sweating so much, you then can't take off your outer garment because the inner garment is covered in sweat.
Everything's ruined.
And so you have to stay hotter in order to protect your own. Eddie Howe was doing, I was a few feet away from him at the start of the run. What a tactical blunder by a master.
What I find most surprising about that is, I'll be honest, I didn't think Eddie Howe owned any outfits beyond the Newcastle United training outfits, because I've seen him, even in social occasions, and he only ever seems to be wearing that. So I presume that it's the only thing he had in the cupboard, and that's why that wasn't Newcastle United branded.
I didn't see the shoes. Was it the black shoes with the white soles, the pundit trainers? Was he wearing those?
I couldn't see.
It must have been all black.
It was all black. It was an all black outfit. I didn't see his shoes. I didn't. Anyway, yeah, that was a strange episode.
Maybe he was off to deliver chocolates to a lady in the bath later that night.
He looked good. I have to say, he looked good. He looked really hot.
Definitely dressed for a night out and not for high five and 60,000 Geordies, was he, on a boiling hot afternoon? Chris Woff's here and all. Chris, aren't you? Eventually, how are you doing?
I am. Yes. Well, I have decided that. I was at a wedding in Dorset over the weekend, and Lovely. Having nearly melted on the train between London and Dorset, I've decided that counts as my one trip to the South Coast for the season, so therefore I'm deferring the rest of them to George for the rest
You're
of the year.
You're not doing anymore.
Yeah, but my wedding counts as the one game I would usually do down there, so unlucky, George.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chris. By the way, just I should have mentioned when we're talking about Jacob, he basically keeled over, and he had a lot of help from St John's Ambulance. We have to say thank you to them, but also want to give a shout out to Matt Laws, who was running, and stopped with him for a few minutes to make sure he was okay. And the two of them have been in touch since then, but I don't know if Matt listens to the podcast, but we would just like to say thank you very much. All seriousness, thank you very much. Thanks for looking after him. And of course, have to say thank you to the incredible people who line the route
absolutely
of the run every year. It is a very, very special day, and without those ice pops on Sunday, I wouldn't have got round as well as the shouts of encouragement. It was, yeah, really needed it this year.
Absolutely, well done to you, George, and well done to Jacob as well for getting as far as he did before keeling over. With the Great North Run in mind, we had a little bit more reaction to Sir Brendan Foster's appearance last week. We got an email. This is great. This from John Freeman. John wanted a little bit of help with ticket admin, which unfortunately, John, if you're listening, we can't help you with. But good luck with that. But he had some very interesting information about Brendan Foster's pre-match race around Wembley at the 1974 FA Cup final. Regarding Sir Brendan Foster from last week's show, John writes, and more specifically, the black and white vest he wore before the Cup final that he mentioned. It's hanging in my dad's kitchen in Ireland, as my wife's granddad was at the game and came back with the top, as I believe it was thrown into the crowd. That is amazing.
Wow. That's incredible.
What a souvenir that is. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I mean, Brendan was, what a legend he is. It was great having him on. Of course, he's such a great man. He came to the Sir Bobby Robson tent afterwards in the Charity Village in the Great North Run and was there congratulating everyone. He somehow manages to be everywhere all at once on what must be a massive day, but he always takes time to come and see people. He always comes down to the Sir Bobby tent, which is brilliant. And another little self-indulgent thing. I'd just like to give a shout out to Keith Farquharson, who was one of the Bobby's team runners. Most of us were football writers. We also ran with Mark Robson, one of Bobby's sons, but Keith Farquharson is actually a patient of the Cancer Trials Research Centre in Newcastle. And I ran the last few miles with him and crossed the line with him. He is an absolute inspiration and a fantastic fella. Didn't know if we'd be around to do the run, which puts a lot of stuff into perspective. But yeah, brilliant. And just want to say thank you to everybody who's contributed to the foundation, because it does incredible work.
Of course, and well done, of course, to anyone listening who ran the race on Sunday. You're all gems, every single one of you. Right then, let's move on to Chris Woff's favourite topic, international football. Chris, how are you doing? Are you feeling all right talking about this? Because you probably kicked your height in the little meeting before we started recording, didn't you? You don't want to talk about international football at all.
Well, I haven't watched a single minute of it. I really don't care. So, yeah, but go on, please do.
Yeah, well, Newcastle's players have been busy, some of them at least. Alexander Isak scored in Sweden's 5-0 win over Estonia. Sandro Tonali started for Italy in their 1-1 draw in North Macedonia, but will not play in Milan against Ukraine as he has a minor muscle injury. Chris, have you heard anything about this? Anything to worry about?
I don't know the exact specifics of it. It seems to me to maybe be one of those typical international break injuries, at least I hope it is.
Yeah.
And it's one of the ones where you just wouldn't take a risk on it, given that Newcastle have some big fixtures coming up. That's what I'm hoping anyway. I can't say that for certain.
He has a far bigger assignment in Milan coming up, doesn't he?
Absolutely, we'll talk about that as well. Bruno as well, he got an assist on his first start for Brazil in Brazil as they beat Bolivia 5-1. And he's also rumoured to be close to a contract renewal, George, isn't he?
Yes, I mean, it's not a rumour, it's true. I think that is pretty much done now. That's good news. It was, I think it was last season when talk of a contract renewal started and it's been hanging about. He was asked about it in the summer in the United States. There was a handful of us talking to him and Big Joe in New Jersey, and we asked it, and he said it. He used the word concern about it in the sense that it hadn't been done. Talked to Howe about it. He said he wasn't concerned and was confident and happy that it would be done. But obviously, he's arguably Newcastle's biggest asset in terms of value. So you want it to be done. You want the club to be protected. There's been to and fro on how much you get paid. I think he wanted a bit more when it was the first offer came to him, and that's all been done. But yeah, they're very close now, and that's good news.
But I know there's also been lots of interest on Bruno's new contract in our Twitter mentions as well. A £100 million release clause has been suggested by Lethario on Twitter. It's got to be high on that, surely, Chris. Hasn't he be gone within a week if that was the price?
I don't know the exact ins and outs of if there specifically is a release clause. I think a lot of people are trying to find out at the moment. The suggestion a few months ago anyway would be that there probably would be one if Bruno Guimarães was going to sign a long-term contract. I would have thought it would be more than 100 million, but equally that you get very complicated release clauses now. And I know for some deals, at least what was floated when players would in discussions with Newcastle before they signed, these are players who didn't necessarily sign, were that there could even be specific release clauses for specific clubs or leagues. So whether there's that, I don't know for certain with Bruno Guimarães, but I do know that it was certainly an early part of discussions about this contract. There was talk that there would be a release clause of some form.
Yeah, I mean, 100 million is actually a lot of money. I mean, we've just seen Declan Rice go from West Ham to Arsenal for 105 million this summer, and then Caicedo's gone to Chelsea from Brighton for a bit more than that. I mean, doesn't sound like a bargain, that, to me, when you consider that he cost 40 million, was it?
Yeah.
And, you know, release clauses can be put into a contract in the player's interest in order to sort of get them out, and they can be put into the contract in a club's interest in order to kind of protect them. I mean, a figure like that, I don't really understand. If it was that high, I don't really understand what that release clause would do or who it would benefit, because it's a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of money. It's not like, you know, Newcastle would be letting him go for a bargain if that was met. Sometimes clauses also have time constraints on them. They can only be available for a month in a transfer window, or a couple of weeks, something like that. So as Chris says, they can often be very, very complicated, that you have these little sort of windows when they can be activated.
Yeah, they have caveats and all sorts, don't they? It can be certain clubs, or it can be certain competitions and all that kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
There's others wondering on our Twitter feed if Newcastle have had many release clauses in player contracts in the past. Mike Lone, did he have a release clause?
Well, if he did, I'm just devastated it wasn't met.
Demba Ba as well. I remember that. He must have been. He was the king of release clauses, Chris. Yeah. Demba Ba, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that was, again, as George says, sometimes release clauses can be in the player's interest, and that one sort of was, because Barr signed on a free transfer, and it was Newcastle took a bit of a gamble on him, but he also, some of the way that his deal was structured was based on that, and so then he had a release clause of 7 million, which obviously Chelsea then met. There was also Mikel Merino had a release clause. Yeah. Newcastle had benefited from the release clause to sign him in the first place, and then afterwards people talked about his release clause seemed quite low, but that was partly time dependent, but also it was Newcastle would never have signed him if he hadn't had a release clause in the first place. And then he wanted a release clause inserted into his contract. Yeah. So, and then we also had Ayoze Perez, who went because of a release clause to Leicester City. So that they are not rare, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't say they're in every single contract, but they're not necessarily rare. But they can be specific, they can be secret sometimes, and they don't even find out about them because the players move separately. But I mean, Ayoze Perez is nobody knew about knew about it until he actually went, basically. Yeah,
fair enough. Right, then let's get moving on, chaps. Get in touch as well if you can out there. We're all on Twitter, easy to find, as is the show, at Pod on the Tyne. And if you hate Twitter or X with a passion, you can email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. We'll be back in just a moment
after George has put his
George has just got up and walked away from this recording to, I presume, put a shepherd's pie in the oven, which is what he said he was going to do.
Was it shepherd's or cottage pie? I don't know.
Well, right, okay. Cottage pie. It's cottage is beef, isn't it? And shepherd's pie is lamb.
Yeah, I believe so.
Is that right?
I believe so.
You should know this, Chris. Oh, you're a meat connoisseur.
Yeah, well, it makes no difference to me. I'll eat either, so.
There's a podcast idea for you, Chris. Chris Woff's Meat Masters. You just get in local butchers and interview them. What's your favourite sausage? Yeah. Back in a moment. He's just fucked off, hasn't he?
I'm your jelly baby.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
George, was it shepherd's or cottage pie?
Shepherd's.
Oh, you're right.
Lamb mince.
That's right, yes, that's correct. Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. Right, come on then. Right then, back onto the Premier League, and Newcastle have a very big run of games coming up. Starting with Brentford at St James's Park this Saturday, 5:30 p.m. kickoff. And George, excuse my language, but this is a big fucking game now, isn't it?
I was very dramatic. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's I suppose it feels more like a big week, doesn't it? I mean, because I think, you know, Brentford, it's back of those days of the big little games. It's not the most glamorous game. It's not Newcastle pushing at the top of the table, but it is, you know, they need a response to Brighton in particular, because it was really disappointing, and they need to get the season back on track. And of course, it's going to set the mood and the tone. They've then got that, you know, enormous match a couple of days later in Milan. Very, very exciting. But you want to be able to concentrate on that Milan game, feeling confident, feeling good, not sort of half being concerned about what's going on in the league. So it feels like a big game. It feels like they just need to win. They need to win a match. That's a very sort of simple thing to say, a simplification, but they do. They need, the stadium needs to be at it, the players need to be at it, and they need to kind of get things back on track. I agree. It's going to set the tone, and Newcastle want to be flying to Milan, not feeling concerned about the pressure of the league.
Yeah.
This strikes me as very similar to the Fulham game last October for Newcastle, which came immediately after the second international break, when the first one at this stage, but whereby it feels as if it could really help define what's going to happen over the course of the next few months, and how the start seems pretty negative at the moment, because Newcastle have only won one of their first four, they've lost the last three games. But if Newcastle, in this big week of three matches, if they come out with three positive results, then suddenly I think there is a very different feel, yeah, around the season, around the club, around everything that can be achieved going forward. Whereas if Newcastle don't beat Brentford, or certainly don't pick up at least 4 points from the Brentford and Sheffield United matches, then I think immediately the league form becomes a real concern going into what look like eminently winnable fixtures. But if Newcastle don't have the sort of form to do it, so I agree, last season they saw that internally, and I think they realised that this international break, there's been a lot of discussion about that and about how this really can put the season back on an upward trajectory and give them some real momentum at a time that they needed.
Yeah, I mean, it should be remembered, of course, said this before, that in terms of the league, they won their first league match last season against Forest, but then it was one win in seven, and, you know, we forget that.
Yeah.
They did draw all of the other games apart from that kind of very emotive and difficult defeat at Anfield. But they did all right last season, didn't they, after that run at the start? And I think, you know, in some ways it took that Liverpool game to sort of prove something to themselves, I think, and to give themselves something to respond to. I think we hoped that the Liverpool game this time might do the same at Brighton. There was a lot of anger internally at the fact that they'd let that match slip. But we didn't really see that on the pitch at Brighton. I mean, the first two or three, 4 minutes aside, things slipped pretty quickly, and it did feel like a lack of confidence. So, you know, they've had a lot of internationals away, which isn't ideal, but the people who've gone away, it gives them a chance to think about something else for a while. The people back at home, there's been a bit of respite and a bit of time. And so you hope that they can sort of attack that game with fresh minds and fresh bodies. And there does need to be a response. We need to see and feel that things will be okay.
Yeah, and as George says, Chris, as well, there has been an awful lot of the squad who've been away on international duty. I'm thinking about those Brazilian lads. Do we expect them to be all right and involved?
Yeah, we spoke about them earlier in this podcast, and I argued with our producer that this should have been something the natural then evolution on. I am going to bring that up.
Just stop it, yeah.
You're a twat, Gareth. You're a twat on a knob end. You're a cock, you're a cock, you're a cock. You're a cock.
Anyway, I do think that they will be involved. I mean, Joel Linton has obviously had some fitness issues, lack of training at certain points, although I think he has trained a little bit more than has necessarily been thought publicly.
Yeah.
The big debate is whether the midfield balance really it should be how it was before the international break. That's what a lot of Newcastle fans are saying. Do the midfield three of Joel Linton, Bruno Guimaraes and Sandro Tonali actually work? I think that there is a decent chance that Bruno Guimaraes and Joel Linton will start this weekend. Part of me wonders if Sandro Tonali may be kept back, partly because of what you mentioned earlier about the supposed muscle fatigue that he's had in national duty, but also the return to Milan on Tuesday and whether it's that's the game that he selected for these three. And what I find more interesting necessarily than just discussing whether the internationals will be involved is how Newcastle actually approach this three-game week, because a lot was said going into this season, both internally, externally, everyone, about how Newcastle needed extra depth. Well, so far this season, Eddie Howe's made one change, which was enforced. He hasn't rotated because they've had one game a week. But now is the time where we see, does he trust those players to come in and it be a different level? Will Harvey Barnes maybe start this weekend or on Tuesday instead of the other weekend? Will Tino Livramento maybe get a game here or there? Will Lewis Hall, although we obviously know his fitness maybe hasn't been up to speed, will Sean Longstaff come in somewhere? Will there be rotation, or will Eddie Howe look to try and as much as possible play the same 11 in all three matches, in which case maybe the squad isn't as deep as we necessarily thought? So I think that will tell us a lot about the levels that Eddie Howe thinks the rest of his squad are at.
I agree with Chris. I do think it's very interesting that they're a lot closer, theoretically at least, to having two 11s, and you know that's what Howe talked about wanting. You can just look at the bench and see that Newcastle's squad is much, much stronger. The funny thing, the ironic thing, is that the first team hasn't been much stronger in terms of those changes. As Chris says, you know, the only new signing to start a league match has been Sandro Tonali, and he started all of them. And certainly in terms of results, and also in terms of what we're seeing with our naked eye, that's not working. Because, albeit you can watch Tonali and think to yourself, he's absolutely the real deal, that midfield is not working. So it's either that they're being asked to do different things that they're not used to, or Bruno and Jolinton have lost a bit of form, or it's just about accommodating that whole thing. The midfield last season was such a strength. When you had that three of Bruno, Jolinton and Sean Longstaff doing all the running, you know, it was such a formidable midfield and they all complemented each other. It's not just about throwing in, and I'm not saying Newcastle have done this, it's not about throwing in good players and just trusting that it works. It has to be part of a system, and at the moment that system hasn't been producing yet. And so I think it'll be very interesting to see what he does to the team, if anything, this weekend, and then what the knock-on effect is for the Champions League, because that is the idea for signing these players, is that there is that capacity to rotate that they just didn't exist last season.
Chris, is there much of a chance of us seeing Callum Wilson from the start, maybe, against Brentford? Obviously, Alexander Isak's scored for Sweden, but he hasn't exactly been banging them in the league, has he?
No, and obviously Wilson came on, took his goal very well at Brighton. Did miss a little bit of training, I think, with England. I have paid a little bit of attention to what's been going on international-wise, not fully, but...
You love it, really.
Oh, very much so. So I think that there is a decent chance, again, because maybe then Alexander Isak starts at AC Milan. So I think that is the way that Howe seems to have suggested that he's almost sold this to both of them, particularly Wilson. The fact that he hasn't started the season in the team is that he will play some matches. So I'd be shocked if Wilson didn't start at least one of the three games next week, and maybe that will be against Brentford if Alexander Isak is deemed to be the player who starts at AC Milan.
But then there's also, I mean, Wilson didn't replace Isak at Brighton. Isak went onto the left, and actually, for a fact, you know, Wilson did take his goal very well. But there was a response when those substitutes came on.
Isak started running at the fullback, didn't he? And give him some problems.
Yeah, and he actually, I thought he looked more effective there. I mean, this is something that Jacob and I wrote about over the international break, tried to do a bit of myth busting in terms of the start of the season and look at some of the data, but also speak to people around the club to get an idea about the whole thing about whether Eddie Howe was under pressure, what they'd done in the transfer market, but then also sort of looking at some individual players. Some of the stuff around Tonali was very interesting. Against Brighton, he was further up the pitch than anybody, almost. So that felt like a very different role to the role that he'd played against Liverpool and in some of the earlier matches. It was also interesting to see how isolated Isak had been in some games, including against Liverpool, when you would have thought that when Newcastle had an extra man, he would have had more of the ball, not less of it. So, I mean, I think it shows that this still is a work in progress, which is kind of quite weird when you think it's only one player coming in. Brighton have sold a shitload of players and brought in a load of players. Newcastle did some research, again, in terms of transfers. Of all the teams that finished in the top six last season, of all the teams that are in the top six now, Newcastle have had fewer new players to integrate into their team. And so that sense of, were they trying to be too clever in the transfer window, is an interesting one when you talk about Livramento and how much he cost, and Lewis Hall, how much he will cost. You know, did they need another midfielder ahead of those players? Newcastle would argue that they had to protect themselves and the areas of the team where they had less strength and depth in terms of quality. And again, we won't really see the merit of that argument until we actually see some of those players come into the team and play.
To play a slight devil's advocate, because I do agree that, I don't think the midfield balance has been ideal, but you got tactical, George, so I'm going to go further on it. I think the difference at Brighton was, it was clear that Newcastle actually weren't off the ball in their usual 4-3-3. It was more of a 4-5-1, and actually it was the midfielders who went forward more, and Gordon and Almiron at times were almost like auxiliary wing-backs. So I think that partly explains the Tonali situation. I know it doesn't fully explain it, but I do think that's partly why it was slightly different to Brighton, because you could see Newcastle had set up differently.
Yeah, and I think, to go back to the original question, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Wilson start, and on that form that he showed at Brighton, I would welcome that. And yeah, I mean, Longstaff was probably the obvious odd one out at the start of the season if you're trying to pick a team that has Tonali in it, but they've missed him. They absolutely miss not just his running and his energy, but also his quality. You know, I think he's a great player. And again, it presents an interesting, it's sort of fascinating to see how little parts of the team can then affect all the other bits of the team when just one or two people go out of it, and how you try and adapt. And Tonali is a very, very different player to Sean. And I think there are selection questions and quite interesting ones.
Another player who'd be looking to get some minutes in those rotations in the next week or so, Elliot Anderson. Chris, how's his injury situation? He's been pulled from the Scotland squad. Sorry, a little Freudian slip there. Pulled from the Scotland squad, but he's rumoured to be getting the glad eye from Gareth Southgate and possibly switching allegiances.
Well, yeah, for most of his youth international career, Elliot Anderson has represented Scotland. He has a grandparent on his mother's side, I think it is, before he qualifies for Scotland, despite being born in Whitley Bay. But then he did represent England under 20s, I think it was, or trained right with them anyway. So he does qualify for both still, and seeing as he hasn't been capped, even though he's called up to the Scotland squad, there is still that situation available to him. He has had a bit of a niggling injury, and he's come back to Newcastle. I think that probably, as long as he has got some fitness, that has probably done his selection hopes for the next week probably some good. I mean, Eddie Howe, we've seen this previously. Sven Botman has pulled out of previous international squads, and then he's found himself in the team.
Yeah.
So I think that, again, rotation-wise, we will see. Elliot Anderson had a wonderful pre-season. Some people argued that he should have started the season in the team. Certainly at Man City, I thought he made a difference. There's a couple of matches he's come on and looked good. But does Eddie Howe trust him to start a match yet? We will find out again over the course of next week. And I think, again, as long as he's fit, this feels like as good a time as any for him to play at least one of those three matches.
And Harvey Barnes could be going in the other direction as well, couldn't he? Switching from England to Scotland.
Well, it's fascinating. Yeah, that's something else that's been talked about. It's kind of difficult to get your head around it, really, isn't it? This idea of sort of moving between countries as a... I mean, it's a kind of interesting sort of debate when these kids get targeted at such a young age to do it. And of course, I still haven't decided what I want to be when I grow up, let alone all the rest of it. And so they're kind of being asked to commit to something as big as that as a kid. And of course, so I do understand it in that sense. But I don't know. It's also a bit sort of strange, this idea of not being sure about who you want to represent, and is it because you've got more chance of playing than not, and all the rest of it.
Would you qualify for Belgium, George?
So I was born in Belgium. I now can't remember.
That explains an awful lot to me, that. I have to
Does
be
it? What?
Yeah.
Is that racist? That's racist.
No, not even slightly. I've been to Belgium a saying? Few times, and I've right. met a lot of Belgian people.
Right, and?
And you fit the mold perfectly.
What does that mean?
Likes to drink very strong beer.
It's to do with chocolate.
I'm the eighth most famous person to come from Brussels, from Belgium. You're aware of that? I'm somewhere between Tintin and Eddie Merckx.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. What was I saying that? No, so true story. I was born there. At that time, I was eligible for dual nationality, or was eligible to become Belgian, but I would have had to have done national service for Brazil, so my parents
Belgium,
took the decision not.
You just actually said Brazil.
Did I say Brazil? See, I'm the same. I'll just go to whoever offers me a game. Brazil, yeah, no
Amazing.
Problem. So I would have had to have done national service for Belgium. So my
you
parents
switched allegiances there within 5 seconds,
like at the drop of a hat, at the drop of Bruno's magic hat.
That's it.
I mean, I did. Yeah, terrible.
All right, let's move this on. We're getting silly. Chris, apparently Kieran Trippier starting a left-back for England against Scotland, we hear. The lineup's not been announced just yet, but the game is on Channel 4. That's a bit weird, isn't it? Football on Channel 4. Whatever next?
I don't watch international, so I have no idea whether that's weird or not. But Trippier starting a left-back is an interesting one, and I've seen some people...
He's played there before for England, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I've seen, he started some major tournaments in that position for England in some games. And I've seen some fans argue, well, could he play for Newcastle with Livramento having come in? I do think that is more of a defensive move, because Trippier, he's got a good left foot, but it's a right foot, which is a real important weapon. And I think you'd lose a heck of a lot if you switch Trippier from the right to the left. In an emergency situation, maybe. But I suspect that if Sven Botman is fit and available this weekend, then Newcastle will shift back to the back four that serviced them very well last season, and Dan Byrne will go back out to left back, and Sven Botman will play left centre back. Otherwise, I suspect that it'll probably be the same back four that played at Brighton, even though there were some issues, and obviously Matt Target was hooked at one stage as well, so we shall see.
Fair play. Let's move on then, chaps. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about the lasses.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So Stoke City unable to do it on a scorching hot Sunday in Kingston Park, a match that was in fact interrupted by the torrential downpour that happened late on Sunday afternoon. Goals from Georgia Gibson, Alicia Boddy, Bridget Galloway sealed a 3-1 win. Hannah Greenwood unfortunately saw red late on in the game, but all in all, another good result, and it's now a very, very good start to the season, isn't it, George?
Yeah, two wins out of two in the league. I've obviously I was doing the Great North Run, so I wasn't able to be there. But I've watched their highlights on Newcastle's website. And I had a friend there as well who said it was a really dominant performance. Brilliant goal from Georgia Gibson. She looked to be in really, really good form. And yeah, can't ask for much more than they've done so far. I experienced some of that weather in South Shields. Yes. that caused the match to be delayed a bit. It was really incredible. But yeah, they're looking so good. They're looking really, really strong. We know that it's a marathon of a league and it's a very unforgiving league. But I mean, just really encouraging so far.
Yeah, so far only Newcastle and last year's champions Nottingham Forest, the only teams in the FAWNL Northern Premier who can boast a 100% record as well, Chris. That's quite impressive.
Well, Newcastle, as we know, have only just come up in this level, and they've clearly stepped it up. They've brought in a lot of players over the summer, and I mean, the ambition again is that they've made it quite clear they would like to go up once again. So they've started very well. Nottingham Forest will pose a huge challenge for them because they've continued their form from last year. But Becky Lange and Lasses have made the ideal start, and they can hopefully build from this position.
Absolutely. And the FAWNL Cup draws happened as well. Newcastle United will travel to the fantastically named Boldmere St Michael's on Sunday, October the 1st. I can't imagine what kind of magical place that is, George.
No, I mean, that is one of the names. That's the name of a place that I couldn't tell you what part of the country that was in.
Could be anywhere.
Literally could be anywhere. Where do you think, Chris? Southern. Do you think southern? I mean, I think
well,
southern.
Well, I've just Googled it, so I can't pretend.
Well, okay, don't give the game away yet. I'm getting slightly Hobbity vibes. I think it's... so.
I think it's somewhere near Dorset.
I think it's got a shire. I think whatever the county is, it's Lord of the Rings, Hobbity. It's got a shire in the name.
Go on, then.
I'm going to say Twatshire.
Come on, Chris, pour us out of our misery. Where is it?
I mean, it's Sutton Coldfield, so it's basically the outskirts of Birmingham, so it's not quite what you were saying.
Quite so magical after all.
No, that doesn't sound particularly magical, does it? No.
Absolutely not. Anyway, let's move on. Another international fixture in the news this week, albeit for very different reasons. No Newcastle players involved, but Saudi Arabia lost 3-1 to Costa Rica. Attendance was listed as precisely 5,000, which is quite a suspiciously round number, isn't it? And there was a small protest group outside the ground. Jacob's written a piece about this. I read that this morning. It's an excellent piece. I'd recommend anybody going and having a look at that. George, the Saudi Arabia games at St James's Park. It's been a little bit of a controversial point, hasn't it?
Yeah, and so they played two games. They're playing South Korea this evening as we record. So we'll kind of wait to see how many people have gone to that. Yeah, it is a bizarre thing. I mean, on the one hand, it's absolutely a logical thing to happen when you've got 80% owners Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, when they've identified Saudi Arabia as a target for increasing support for the club in that part of the world. And of course, you know, it's a way for Newcastle to increase their revenue when you're talking about appearance, you know, paying to appear at St James's and all the rest of it. There's certainly a degree of logic to it. It also felt controversial in the sense of being... is inflammatory the right word? I'm not sure if it is, but obviously when the takeover happened, the big thing was that the Premier League talked about being given those guarantees about separation between Newcastle's owners and the Saudi state. Obviously, this is the football team. It's not the state itself, but it sort of felt like a needless kind of inflammatory thing. Yeah, I don't know. I've not paid any attention to it. I've no interest in going to see that.
Same.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, Newcastle, St James's is about Newcastle United. And, you know, there were some clips on social media about the protesters and some of the response to that. I found that really disappointing and sort of didn't enjoy that at all. I don't know. I don't like it. It's not something I'm interested in. I would recommend people reading Jacob's piece. I don't know how much interest there was locally either. I mean, it was a crowd of 5,000. Jacob talks about it being a very different sort of attendance. Lots of Saudi students there. It's interesting. It's part of the reality, of course, of Newcastle's existence now. It's just part of it that I'm not massively keen on, I have to say.
I'm not either. But I mean, when you mention the sort of wider interest and was there any... and this may be because I have no interest in international football and also I haven't really been massively on social media, but I didn't see loads of it being pushed, really, that it was really pushed out there. So it almost seems as if Newcastle United have had this, but haven't made a massive thing about that it's been at St. James's Park. That may be an unfair representation, but that's the way that it seems to be to me, is if it's almost like, we're going to do this, but we're not going to make it an overt sort of thing. I said from the very start that over time, the relationship would only almost inevitably get stronger, and I think that that is turning out to be the case. And yeah, it's not something I would have any interest in going to see, not only because it's international football, but also I just wouldn't want to go anyway. So I did find it quite unsavoury, some of the videos that were doing the rounds. I agree with George, the protesters are there making very valid points, which not everyone may agree with, or not everyone may feel it is the arena for them to do it in terms of it representing the football club or whatever their views may be. But equally, that they have every right to be there, and I do think that some of the comments were completely unnecessary.
I have to say as well, like from a fan's perspective as well, those few people who they showed on that video, you know, they were in the minority, I've been led to believe, and the majority of fans were quite happy to let the protesters go about their business peacefully, which I think is the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's absolutely what they should be allowed to do. A couple of numpties trying to get views on social media accounts is one thing, but I don't think it was...
No, I mean, it's funny, we've been thinking about this for years now, for a long time. It's not just since Newcastle's been owned, which is getting on for 2 years now, by the new ownership group. It was for a long time before that, and I think it is important that we remain mindful of it and that we think about it and don't, you know, not. I think there was that reaction in football where if something gets attacked, it's like you're being attacked or your club is being attacked. But there are some kind of important subjects here that sort of should go beyond that. Absolutely doesn't mean you have to agree with what protesters are saying. Likewise, you might have absolutely the opposite views. You might have views that are somewhere in the middle. You might be conflicted. You might not be. But I don't think we have to think of everything as an attack on us, because it's not. And there wouldn't be need to be protests if these games weren't happening. And I certainly don't think Newcastle have got anything out of it from a local point of view in terms of people who were there. So my assumption is that it's for the audience back in Saudi.
Yes, I would say so. Let's move on and round things up. We have just seen in the last few days as well some CGI images released of what the fan zone or the fan park potentially at St. James's Park is going to look like. Chris, have you seen these images?
I have indeed, yes. Two big screens is going to be, and there's going to be a stage in the middle. It's where the former Metro car park was, just on Strawberry Place, the lease of the land, which was acquired back by the club after having been sold by Mike Ashley in 2019, or finalised in 2019. So yes, this is what the hope to have something in place, I think, by the end of the year, or certainly at least the foundations of it in place by the end of the year. And then that will be somewhere where people can go before and after the game, but it'll be open 7 days a week, and then also it'll show some of the matches, the ones that it can, and then over time we will see what happens with that land, because I know that there's still the big question mark about expansion and whether that's the obvious place to go, whether you can expand the Gallagher end into that area. But for at least the short to medium term, there's going to be this stack as was previously opposite the Tyneside Cinema in Newcastle. It's now moving across to next to St. James's Park.
It was really good. You know, it was really good, that place. Taylor, you played there a few times, didn't you?
Yeah, loads of times. Yeah, I was a regular there. Yeah, you used to do that quite a lot. I've already stuck my name down for pre-match gigs at the new fan zone if that happens. So I'm sure I'll be mentioning that at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll have people flocking in
flocking in opposite direction.
But, it's quite interesting. I mean, so a lot of the new stadiums, you know, like for example, or newer stadiums, they're in the middle of nowhere. So like the Etihad Stadium in Manchester, there's nothing around it, and that the fan zone around it is therefore quite good, because it gives people, you know,
somewhere to go, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Somewhere to go and congregate. They put music on the stage, and that's kind of quite nice, and they get special guests. I mean, you could argue that Newcastle already has a fan zone. It's called the fucking pub.
The City of Newcastle.
It's called the pub. It's called the City of Newcastle. And so, you know, I wouldn't want this to detract that people away from the pubs and all the rest of it. I don't think it will. I think if more people are attracted into the city centre before a match, then that sort of benevolence will sort of spread everywhere. And that is kind of dead land as well, that sort of bit. It's an ugly stretch of land, and it's, you know, I think it's great to have something interesting, exciting. And what, you know, one of the things where Newcastle have a lot of catching up to do is in the stuff that they provide inside the stadium for supporters in terms of food and drink. I know they've redone some of the higher end stuff, but it'll be nice if you can actually go to somewhere that's kind of attached to the club, get a nice pint, get something good to eat, and hang out. One very silly thing, if you've not seen the CGI pictures, have a look and sort of zero in onto the people that they put there. They're absolutely hilarious. People randomly getting cross at a football match.
Someone celebrating.
Playing. Someone
looking unhappy. Yeah.
Yes, I love all that.
Absolutely. We need a man in just his underpants with a carrier bag, just CGI'd in there somewhere. That's what you need, don't you? Right then, let's move on and get things wrapped up. Lots of messages to us as well about ticketing. Unfortunately, we don't really have anything substantial to say on that at the moment, but we know you're keen to hear that discussion, so we promise to line something up in the not-too-distant future. In the meantime, if you do have concerns about ticketing, what I would suggest personally is speaking to somebody involved with NUST and joining that organisation, because those are the guys who can speak to the club on behalf of fans and get any information out there about ticketing. On top of that, we'll be back on Monday to preview Newcastle's trip to Milan. Yes, that's right, Milan in the Champions League. Chris, I don't know if you saw this tweet from Jacob yesterday, or today was it? Interesting numbers from Opta Analyst Prediction Model on the chances of each member of Newcastle United's groups reaching the quarterfinals. Newcastle at the top of that prediction model with 28.3%. Now, is that purely based on the fact that we can't possibly get Manchester City in the round of 16?
Interesting.
It may well be. It may well be that. But I also think, I mean, obviously the data that will have applied to Newcastle has no European history towards it in terms of recent European history. So that skews everything. But I do think if you're taking on board Newcastle's form last season, their home form in general, then that's probably where that gets generated by. And also the issues we've already spoken about in recent weeks went when the draw was made, that each of the teams Newcastle have drawn, in particular Milan and Dortmund, they do have weaknesses. They're not necessarily the Milan and Dortmund that we know from the past.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I do think Newcastle have a very good chance of progressing from this group. It will be difficult, but I do think that none of those teams will fancy coming to St James's.
Can't wait to see Dan Burn smash one in the San Siro. An overhead kick from the edge of the box, something mad like that.
Can't wait. Yeah, it is fascinating. Of course, this isn't the Newcastle of last season either.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's give and take on that. But yeah, hopefully a good win against Brentford on Saturday sets things up nicely. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant occasion, come what may. I'm going to be there. Very lucky. So is Ollie, our producer. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
Great stuff. Right then, I think I've tried to wrap this podcast up 5 times already, but let's do it properly this time. Subscribe to The Athletic via theathletic.com/Newcastle pod and pay just $1 or £1 a month, depending on where you're located, for 12 months. That's it, chaps. Thanks very much for your time, Chris.
You're very, very welcome. I'm glad the international break is nearly over.
Yeah, I kind of like thought it was, you know, for the first time for a long time, I was ready for an international break. We all needed a bit of, things were too tetchy with Newcastle, and then it lasts for about 2 days, and it's like, oh, fucking hell, this is awful.
This is garbage. Awful. Yeah.
We're going to have to talk about this on the podcast.
Bring back football that I actually care about, please.
Chris is going to get angry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for your time anyway, George. It's been fun.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks. And thank you to all you out there listening as well. Of course, we'll be back early next week, Monday, I believe, and we'll have a little chat about that AC Milan game coming up. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, thanks a lot for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Will Jacob have finished the Great North Run by the time we're doing it?
Don't do that.
Matron!
Tinker Christopher Wolf.
Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner StubHub has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.